Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, July 6th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the link that says Start Here in the upper left-hand corner of the page, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for the past 17-plus years to improve the quality of my life and some of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional state I experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us have been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on it, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the use of that tool and or given testimonials about how the use of that tool is improving their life. So we hope you do that soon and often. And if you do and it brings up comments or questions, give us a call. 563-999-3581 is the number. If you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number. And I'll announce to by your area code and we can have a discussion. We are also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 187th day of the year. And so lesson 187, very simply, as most of these lessons say, is I bless the world because I bless myself. And this lesson reiterates the idea that no one can give away something that he or she does not possess. In fact, giving it away is proof of having it. Now, we're living in a world that focuses on the physical. And if I only have a little bit of a physical attribute or a physical substance and I give it away, I have less. So it's a zero-sum game. But what we're called to in this work is the realization that the really important things in life, blessings, love, peace, joy, these are not material things and therefore they are not part of the zero-sum game. And the only way to truly have them is to give them away. And so the commentary goes at this several different ways until you know, it says things like, give gladly. You can only gain by giving. Never forget, you give but to yourself, because we're all connected. Illusions that are recognized disappear in a heartbeat. And the illusion that if you give away love, you've lost something, disappears as you give. So we're going to work to be of one thought and get rid of our fear by acting. And now that we understand that as we bless the world, we are blessed. As we give away the recognition of our true nature as love, then we are blessed. And the Pam Grout Course in Miracles experiment commentary from lesson 187, she titles her chapter, Love, Life is Not a Zero-Sum Game. And she quotes Mitch Albom, who is the author of Tuesdays with Maury and other books, as saying, love is the only rational act. Pam writes, A Course in Miracles turns every accepted paradigm on its head. Lesson 187 reads, I bless the world because I bless myself. This is a prime example. It tells me the only way to protect my assets of love, happiness, beauty, and joy is to give them away. The material world advertises the exact opposite. It says there's only so much to go around. It's vital to protect myself and worry and keep others at arm's distance. If I continue to approach life from what can only be called a scarcity consciousness, I will continue to find proof of limits and lack. This lesson encourages me to, quote, give gladly. It urges me to strengthen my assets by distributing them freely, passing them out to everyone. It says, I reinforce and exponentially increase my blessings when I approach life from the following mindset. Here's the mindset. There is more where that came from. It is impossible to lose anything of value, and everything I give comes back to me tenfold. And here's the thing, Pam writes, I'm not asked to take any of these Course promises on faith. It's like the old Alka-Seltzer slogan. When I try it, extended blessings, I like it. I see blessings and grace and open-hearted people everywhere. So that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson and the Pam Grout commentary. And we have 50 minutes left to have a conversation, to discuss any questions you might have, to hope for the best and get another hour or two of Mindshifter Radio in the books. What's on your mind? What can we support you with? 563-999-3581. I'm doing some writing and sending myself some notes. Most of them from the most recently from the book by Gabor Maté. And there's all kinds of material in that book that's directly related to the teachings that Michael Rice will give you, that you can get from Way of Mastery, that you can get from Course in Miracles, that you can get from Byron Katie, you know, all of these deep Krishnamurti, all these deep, true spiritual teachings. And here is something from a shamanic blessing. Quote, I release my partner from the obligation to complete me. I release my parents from the feeling that they failed me. I release my children from the need to bring me pride so they can write their own paths to the rhythm of their hearts. I don't lack anything. I cherish my essence, my way of expressing it, even if not everyone can understand me. I learn from all beings all the time. I honor the divinity in me and you. And there are quite a few wonderful parts of the book In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts by Gabor Maté. At one point, he's quoting Eckhart Tolle, who says, "Be at least as interested in your reactions as in the person or situation that triggers them. In a mindful state, one can choose to be aware of the ebb and flow of emotions and thought patterns instead of brooding on their content." So we look at a position not like the one that says, he did this to me and therefore I am suffering. But we look at a position that says, I notice that feelings of resentment and a desire for vengeance keep flooding my mind. Although bare attention was developed as a meditative practice, and bare attention here basically means mindfulness, developing the position of the watcher, etc. Although bare attention was developed as a meditative practice, its use is not limited to formal meditation. It is the conscious attending to what occurs in the mind as it takes in physical or emotional stimuli from within and outside the body. Bare attention is the clear and single-minded awareness of what actually happens to us and in us as the successive moments of perception. The key to the transformational potential of this bare attention process lies in the deceptively simple injunction to separate out one's reactions from the core events themselves. Much of the time, it turns out, everyday minds are in a state of reactivity. And we've been so conditioned that we take this for granted. We do not even question our automatic identifications with our reactions. And then we experience ourselves as being at the mercy of an often hostile and frustrating outer world, or an overwhelming or frightening inner world. If we practice bare attention, we move from this automatic identification with our fear or frustration to a vantage point from which the fear or frustration are attended to with the same dispassionate interest as anything else. There is enormous freedom to be gained from such a shift. Instead of running from difficult emotions, or hanging on to the enticing ones, the practitioner of bare attention becomes able to contain any reaction, making space for it, but not completely identifying with it. This is almost exactly what Michael Singer talks about in his work. Gabor writes in his book, as we've already seen, painful early experiences program both the neurophysiology of addiction and the distressing psychological states that addiction promises to relieve. Yet, here's a big yet, human beings who are able to direct conscious attention toward their mental processes discover something surprising. It is not what happened in the past that creates our present misery, but the way we have allowed past events to define how we see and experience ourselves in the present moment. This is exactly the work of Diedrich Wolfsack and his six-step forgiveness process, which is almost exactly the same as Dr. Michael Rice's work, except that Diedrich focuses on uncovering these meanings, these what he calls core beliefs. And so even though our early painful experiences program our neurophysiology and the distressing psychological states, we are able to direct conscious attention toward our mental processes and discover that it's not what happened in the past that creates our present misery, but it's the way we've allowed past events to define how we see and experience ourselves in the present moment that create our misery. A person can survive being beaten, but cannot remain psychologically intact if she convinces herself that she was beaten because she is by nature blameworthy, or because the world is a very cruel place by its very nature. A child can overcome sexual violation, but she will be debilitated if she thinks that somehow she either deserved the abuse or brought it upon herself. She also cannot function as a self-respecting adult if she comes to believe that she is lovable or acceptable only when she's sexually active. A neglected child may be helpless, but the damage comes only if he acquires the defining belief that helplessness is his real and permanent state in the world. The greatest damage done by neglect, trauma, or emotional loss is not the immediate pain they inflict, but the long-term distortions they induce in the way a developing child will continue to interpret the world and her situation in it. So we are encouraging people to actively engage use of the tools to uncover and then dismantle negative beliefs about themselves, which, by the way, by their very nature in this work, if I have a negative belief about myself, we can instantly know three things about it. Number one, it's false, or it's based in a lie. Number two, it's an old tape playing. It's not about the current situation in front of me. It's not about my true nature. And number three, if I take an action based on that negative belief about myself, which we've defined as false, I'm just going to make my life situation worse. I can't possibly improve my current life situation by throwing negative mental or emotional energy into it. So that's what we're offering, a whole series of tools toward that end, to uncover and dismantle negative beliefs about self. Is this Ellen?
Yes, it is. Hi, Dr. Tim.
Hello, Ellen.
Well, thank you so much for everything you just said, because you just helped me make a connection to something. At least I believe that this is a connection. I think I've spoken before about how I have issues with noise, and especially loud, unexpected noise. And, of course, wasn't so much unexpected this weekend with the fireworks and everything, but you never do know exactly when they're going to go off. And so I was really, I just thought it was so funny that the Course in Miracles lesson for the 4th of July was, I want the peace of God. Boy, the day that is like usually the least peaceful for me of the entire year, that was the lesson. About how perfect. So, you know, as I lay in bed listening to these, it sounded like bombs going off all around me. You know, I started doing the work, Byron Katie's The Work. You know, I took the thought, the sound of these fireworks is disturbing me. And, you know, when I asked if it was true, of course, it seems like that on the surface. But when I really dove down into that question, what I discovered, it was really, it's my thoughts about the fireworks that were disturbing me, not the sound itself, but my beliefs about it. And that's from like a mental standpoint. But I did notice, and I notice this all the time, is that whenever I hear a very loud, sudden sound, I have this physical reaction. You know, my body jumps. And so from that standpoint, from the physical standpoint, it seems that, you know, there's definitely a reaction there. So in going with what you were just saying, because I took this back to, I thought, I'm sure that this must have all gotten started when I was an infant and my brother slammed the door to my bedroom. And I couldn't have been more than 6 months old. And I didn't remember this, but I had a regression back to that event. And I was crying, and I guess probably I know he didn't want to hear me because first I heard him yell, someone get her to shut up. But see, my mother didn't attend to me when I cried, so I cried a lot. I guess he got so frustrated with hearing me that he went and he slammed my door. And that, because I didn't see it coming, and the door is so close to my crib, that sudden, loud, unexpected noise was very traumatic. And I'm not sure if in the moment as like a six-month-old or whatever I was, that I made this connection, but as the adult looking back and re-experiencing it, all just as bad as the sound itself was what went with it, which was that was my last hope. The open door was my last hope to be heard, because I needed my mother. I was crying for my mother. And now that the door was closed, all hope was lost. It was like a total shutting out. And so I never made that connection before, as far as today, when these loud noises happen and I get so, you know, triggered by them, that it's not just the physical nature of it where my body jumps, but it's the association with being shut out. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it could be. You might have that meaning attached. Yes, it could be. The other thing that comes to my mind is the idea that there is an auditory channel directly to our amygdala. And So, and the amygdala is that part of the brain that can initiate the fight or flight response and, you know, so the startle response. And if you think of the startle response as kind of jump-starting the fight or flight response, it happens when we've received a signal that there's danger, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there's this auditory channel directly from the ear to the amygdala. And the way to have people understand this, I say, imagine this. I'm sitting in a restaurant with people I really enjoy. We're having a lovely meal. And all of my attention is focused on these people that I enjoy being with and the food. And, you know, there's nothing in my conscious logical mind that's registering anything about danger or fear.
Mm-hmm.
And we happen to be seated in the restaurant near the kitchen, and my back is to the kitchen. And all of a sudden, somebody drops a whole stack of plates, and there's this crash. And I startle and jump and spin around. Why am I jumping? Why am I startling? Why am I spinning around? Right? There's nothing in my conscious logical mind that's saying danger. It's not like I saw, like I'm facing the restaurant and I see somebody come in the front door and they're wielding an axe and they're trying to kill people. There's nothing in my conscious logical mind registering danger. There's just this loud sound, and instantly my heart rate goes up, my breathing stops, I spin around, and my adrenaline's pumping and I'm ready to run or fight for my life. There's the evidence, there's the experiential evidence we have that we need to let us know that the science behind this is solid. There is an auditory channel directly to my amygdala. Just that loud noise. It doesn't, you know, it's not an evolutionarily programmed noise, because they didn't have china plates back when, you know, 6 million years ago or whatever, when the evolution of the brain began. So there is that auditory channel, right? And once it gets programmed, then it needs to be put on extinction. And there's a device called the BAUD. It stands for Bioacoustical Utilization Device, B-A-U-D.
Okay.
Bio, A is acoustical, U is utilization, and D is device. And this device uses, you know, it's a very simple device. It uses the frequency that they've identified as in that range where the amygdala gets stimulated, and it uses it with the principle of wave interference patterns to help put that on extinction. And so people can sit and think about what's upsetting, whether it's a physical or a mental or an emotional issue, and then turn on the BAUD and basically put that response on extinction. They can, you know, learn to tune out the frequency by using wave interference patterns. And even though they're thinking about the thing that's so upsetting or so scary or so depressing, sad, grief-stricken, whatever, because they're using this frequency and wave interference patterns, their body calms down. And so it's like deprogramming that part of the brain and the amygdala using the acoustical frequency. And it might be something that would be useful for you if you find somebody who has one of these things and, you know, spend a few sessions with it. You might be able to break the link in your physiology between this loud noise and this terribly discomforting response in your body, the fight or flight response or the helpless, hopeless response.
Okay. Yeah, I had never heard of that before. And it's something that, you know, and I don't think it's a coincidence that, I mean, where I live, there's just, I mean, there's so many really loud sudden noises, and I'm constantly being triggered by them. You know, between all the sirens that go off and the fireworks. I mean, last year I felt like I thought I was living in a war zone. And I thought maybe this goes back to, you know, if, you know, I'm sure we all have had ancestors that lived in war zones and where it was dangerous, you know, to hear what sounds like bombs going off. And that maybe, you know, that was what was triggering that. But it's not just that kind of sound. It's any sort of loud sound. You know, we have motorcycles and other, like, hot rod type cars that just go, you know, I mean, they're so loud. They just go tearing down the street. And, you know, there's just so many of these noises around me that are constantly triggering me. And it's like, okay, well, I can see how it's my thoughts about these noises that's disturbing me, but I still have this physical response. And so, so that's something that I could look into as far as, like you said, deprogramming that physical response.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, it's both things, right? There is the physiology, and that's in part of the reading that I was quoting. There is the recognition that those traumatic events in our youth and our painful experiences when we're young, they do change the neurophysiology. There's evidence, or really hard science evidence of it. And yet, the real long-lasting upset is produced by what we have downloaded as a meaning about ourselves and the world around us. It isn't the past event that's continuing to create our upset or anything that would disrupt our lives. And that's why the tools are so useful. That's why the reality management worksheet and the mind shifter tool and the three early memories of conflict and the mind goal management sheet, that's why they're so useful, is because it can help me, those tools and the use of those tools can help me identify, what have I made this situation mean? What am I still making it mean? And what do I need to do to dismantle that meaning and replace it with something else that's more accurate, more loving?
Right. Well, I'm wondering if that same sort of connection is made in the auditory system of, like, animals, because I noticed, I mean, of course my cats go into hiding whenever the fireworks start going off, but, I mean, my one cat had come into bed with me after everything I thought was over and came upstairs, came into bed with me, and then all of a sudden, kapow! And he literally, it wasn't just like a jump. I mean, he literally like flew up into the air and came back down. It was like, I was like, wow, look at that.
Yep, that's the startle response in cats. And yeah, it's a physiology just like the human physiology. It can be programmed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for that.
Well, you're welcome and deserving. Anything else we can help you with? Any other comments or questions?
No, I was just thinking this morning about how we spend so much time and attention, have so much concern over our physical bodies, when if we could be paying that sort of attention to what's going on in our minds, it would be so much more useful. Because that was the other thing I was thinking as far as this physical response that I was having. Like, if I wasn't so identified with this body, I don't think the physical response of being startled would even bother me in the slightest. It would just be what it is.
Well, and that is a state that some people reach to varying degrees with mindfulness practice and meditation, et cetera. I mean, there are people who can remain calm when startle noises happen. There are people that can remain sober when they've ingested, mind-altering substances. And it's because they're focused more on the internal process than the physical.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a mastery that can be gained with practice. So I would imagine that that's a very solid hunch you have, and that every little bit you do to do your mindfulness practice or your meditation can aid you in this other process that you're considering. What, pursuing the BOD or something else that could help break that cycle of that connection, that conditioned response, as they call it. Right? Because mm-hmm. the startle response is an unconditioned response. It's something that's built into us, and it's there as a jump start to the fight or flight response to keep us physically alive. Right? We didn't have to be trained or conditioned into it. It's just a part of the body system that we're born into.
Mm-hmm.
So that's called an unconditioned response. It just happens naturally. But then if we train ourselves, we pair that unconditioned response with another stimulus, or if they get paired accidentally, like the slamming of the door in your bedroom by your brother when you were an infant. Now we can make it mean something else. And now the door slamming, which is not normally something that would be, a life-threatening sound or kick off the fight-or-flight response, has now been paired with this, oh my gosh, I've lost all connection, all chance of, getting help from my mother.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being fed all of this negative energy by the phrase, somebody shut her up, et cetera. And now that's paired with the door.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a conditioned response that happens when a loud noise happens, which is, a mimicking of the unconditioned response, which is the fight or flight response, which is there to keep you physically safe.
And I have noticed that I can be in a situation where my mind knows that there's nothing to fear, and yet my body is showing signs of absolute terror, like heart pounding. And I was in that situation not that many years ago, and I knew there was nothing to fear, but yet I really thought my heart just might explode right out of my chest. And so then that started to kind of put me into fear, that not the fear that my body seemed to have, but that my heart might literally explode because my body was panicking, which I thought that was so interesting, that my mind could be somewhat calm, and yet my body, not at all. But I guess maybe this is the same.
It's a similar kind of a thing. It's what a lot of people experience when they have a panic attack.
Okay.
Right. It doesn't have anything to do with sound, but it's what a lot of people experience when they're having an anxiety or a panic attack. I mean, I've worked with all kinds of people, and they go to a movie theater, and they're there with friends and family, and it's a movie they want to see. And all of a sudden, their heart starts racing, and their breathing changes dramatically, and, they're feeling like the walls are closing in on them. And they're there where they know they're perfectly safe and surrounded by friends and family, and they're watching their body go through this panicked reaction. And it's not coming from their conscious mind. Some would argue it is coming from their unconscious, and sometimes it might be. And sometimes it's that physiological response that we're talking about that just, maybe it's been programmed, maybe it's a glitch in the system, maybe there's an imbalance in their hormonal state, but, you know, whatever it is, there has been no pat answer with all of our science throughout the years. People still have anxiety and panic attacks, and fortunately, with the use of the tools, if they're willing to work with their mind and their body's energy system, most people can get significant improvement. Because, you know, part of that is, as we've talked about before, it's a part of my consciousness that I'm not easily willing to look at consciously. So part of my mind has said, hey, Tim, this is too much for you to deal with. So some part of my mind energy is busy trying to hide that awareness from me. So it seems like it's not got anything to do with my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Precisely because my mind has decided it doesn't want to deal with this.
Yeah.
So,
well, I just seem to, you know, keep reading and hearing that it's so important to befriend our mind and I think one of the things I recently read in the book I'm reading right now by Byron Katie is that actually listen to the thoughts in your mind as if you're listening to like a scared child.
Exactly. Exactly. Krishnamurti was saying it decades and decades and decades ago. We must embrace all of our painful emotions as though we were comforting a wounded child.
And she was saying this about the thoughts, but the emotions come from the thoughts, so I guess it's really
exactly. Exactly.
Same thing. Yeah.
And then, and you know, the core of her work is, you know, summarized in the statement, I only suffer when I believe my thoughts.
Exactly.
And you could add the word negative thought in there, but, you know, it doesn't need to. But that's, you know, what am I making this situation mean? That goes right back to the reading I was doing earlier, right? That these painful or distressing or abusive situations can happen in my past, but that's not what's creating the negative impact on my life today. What's creating the negative impact on my life today is what I have come to make it mean about myself.
Right, and that is such an important distinction. Because otherwise we're like thinking, oh, well, you know, because that happened. And there's nothing I can do about that. It happened.
The key realization is that yes, it happened in the past, right? Somebody was talking to Matt Kahn about this, but Matt, you don't understand. I really was abandoned by my mother in the delivery room, and I was days with. And you know, when I was born, this was actually happening. And Matt says, yeah, I believe you. But guess what? You're not being born right now. All right. And here it is from the realm of hungry ghosts. I'll read it again. We've seen that painful early experiences actually program both the neurophysiology of addiction and the distressing psychological states that addiction promises to relieve. So we know this happens. There is an impact from these traumatic events on us when we're children. Yet, human beings who are able to direct conscious attention toward their mental processes soon discover there's something surprising. It is not what happened in the past that creates our present misery, but the way we've allowed past events to define how we see and experience ourselves in the present moment. A person can survive being beaten, but cannot remain psychologically intact if he convinces himself that he was beaten because he is by nature bad, wrong, blameworthy, or because the world is by its nature a very cruel place. A child can overcome sexual violation, but she will be debilitated if she thinks that she somehow either deserved that abuse or brought it upon herself. She also cannot function as a self-respecting adult if she comes to believe that she is only lovable or acceptable when she's sexually active. A neglected child might in that moment be helpless, but the real damage comes if he acquires the defining belief that helplessness is his real and permanent state in the world. The greatest damage done by neglect, trauma, or emotional loss is not the immediate pain they inflict, but the long-term distortions we can take from them in the way we believe about ourselves and interpret the world and our role in it. And that is from the page 371 in the book In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts by Gabor Mate. And the book is just full of good stuff, the same psychological principles, the same, you know, physics that Michael would say of how our minds and bodies work and our thoughts interact with our emotions. Loaded in that book. Same core material clearly feeding Michael Rice's work and Gabor Mate's work and Diedrich Wolzak's work, etc.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And I know for my own self, you know, the times where I've had a breakthrough, I've always seen that the problem was always a misunderstanding. Something I took on that simply wasn't true. I just didn't understand. And until I could see it differently, I was, you know, pretty much a victim of that misunderstanding. It was all an inside job.
Well,
Begin it.
Yeah, it is really, really useful to recognize that. And it's useful beyond words, what words can describe, to have effective tools that we can use to address that once we recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we've got the whyagain.org website that Michael and Jeannie are, you know, maintaining, because they want to make these tools available. And you can go there and download the worksheet, or you can go to your app store and get it on your phone and continually work to identify and then dismantle the negative beliefs about yourself. Because if it's a negative belief about yourself, you can instantly know it's based in a lie or a falsehood. It's an old tape playing. It's not the truth of life. And if you take an action from it, you're just going to make your life worse, not better. You can't add a negative emotion or any a negative emotional energy to your life situation and expect it's going to improve. So it really is just that simple now. But so is digging a ditch, you know, shovel in, dirt out. But it isn't easy. You know, digging a ditch is a lot of hard work. And you have to be focused, and you have to put the shovel in next to where the last shovel was, et cetera. And you've got to do it over and over and over again. Ad infinitum.
That's a metaphor.
But it's that simple, right? If I have a negative thought or a negative emotion going in my system, it's a lie, it's an old tape playing, and I want to stop speaking or acting from it because that's just going to make my situation worse, not better.
Yeah, I like the thought of digging within, digging the well within, you know? The hole that gets you to your wellness. It's like digging a well. I like that that thought.
Yeah, that's a good play on words.
Yeah.
Digging your well or digging your wellness, yeah.
Yeah. Then when you hit the water, it just comes up like a fountain, right? And
well, for a lot of people have that experience, right? They have a breakthrough.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's that old adage that when you stretch your mind to new levels, it never goes back to the same old pattern. It can't. And mm-hmm. for some people, they've experienced that. It is, however, you know, a misnomer to think I'm done when that happens. It just means I've reached a new level, right? It doesn't mean I can't ever get anxious again. But
sure.
it might mean that my anxiety doesn't need medication anymore. It might mean that, you know, it doesn't send me into a panic where I'm thinking I can't live like this. Right? It might become much more manageable. It might happen much less often. I might be able to maintain an entirely different level of conscious awareness when the anxiety hits or the depression hits. Doesn't mean it won't hit. It just means I have a whole different perspective and relationship to it.
Yes. And I choose what meaning I'm going to put on to it, whatever the situation is. It doesn't tell me. The situation doesn't inform me. I inform myself what the situation means. I found myself saying that in a dream the other night. I can't remember what was going on, but it was something distressing. And then I said, no, I decide. I decide what this means. I woke up and I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm getting it.
Yeah, that's a great dream. I would write down that dream and the day you had it, and I would use it, you know, if it were in my life, I would use it as a signpost for my personal progress. It's like Michael wanting people to put their upset level at the beginning of every worksheet. Why? Well, because the ego will work to make me think these tools aren't working, I'm not making any progress. Come on, you did a worksheet on this. You did 37 worksheets on your dad last year, and now it's up again. This stuff doesn't work. Why do another worksheet? But if I go back and look at those worksheets from a year ago, and I recognize that my upset level on a scale of 0 to 10 was 387,000 a year ago, and now it's only an 8 out of 10, so I can have some ammunition to assuage my ego that wants me to believe there's no point in this. I've got some evidence to say, hey, look, there is a point to this. And I would use that dream that very same way. I would write down that dream and put a date on it and put it, you know, and even if it's just on the back of an envelope in the top drawer of your dresser, mm-hmm. to look at from time to time. because that's a validation dream.
Mm-hmm.
That's validating your progress.
Right. Well, that's what I love about the metaphor of the digging, the well, because, I mean, the digging seems the same, right? Over and over and over. It's like the same repetitive thing. And then all of a sudden you hit the water and that's, yeah, there's a breakthrough. So we should not get discouraged when it's like, it's just the digging is happening because we're getting somewhere. We just haven't seen the evidence of it yet, but it's coming. If we're doing the work, it's coming. We're getting there. We are making progress.
Yeah, and it's good to have those reminders.
Yeah.
And it's easier to have those reminders if you're being gentle with yourself.
Yeah.
What were you saying?
Oh, I was going to say the way I used to think about it until you just gave me this great idea about digging was about having full closets and cleaning out the closet. I mean, it's like who knows how much stuff you've got in that closet? Like you just keep taking out until it's done. You know, you don't give up halfway and say, oh, there's still stuff in there. I'll just give up. No, you got to keep at it. Because you don't know how much is in there. You don't know how long it's going to take.
Yep, that works too.
Yeah, but I like the well better. Because then
well,
it's like
I,
you can see the fountain, well, like, that springs up.
Well, and then the closet analogy I use it when I talk about saying goodbye to good people without saying goodbye to good memories. And, you know, we've spent our lives running into things that we thought was too much. And so we throw it in the closet behind us, lock the closet and run in the other direction. And of course the closet's labeled as this is too much. I can't deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start the process of cleaning out the closet. And when you first open up the closet, it's like one of those cartoons where everything tumbles out all over your head.
Yep.
And, you know, one issue at a time, one memory at a time, you pick it up and you work through it. And you might spend, you know, half an hour or an hour do it and then move on and then come back and do it again and come back and do it again. And after a while, it starts to seem like the closet is this tunnel, and it seems endless. But, you know, you do a little bit of work, and you come back, and eventually it seems like you can see a light there at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And you just keep going back and going back, and eventually one day you open up the closet, and you pick up a thing or two, and you look at them, and you process them, and then you look around, and you wonder where the closet went, and there's no closet. There's no tunnel. There's no nothing, because it was all a mental creation built
right.
from the false conclusion that this is too much.
Yeah.
Or that false conclusion, I'm not enough to deal with whatever is up.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for the call and the commentary. We're down to our last minute, so I will mute you and, you can stick around if you wish for the second hour, and I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim.
Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, July the 6th, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581 and press 1 and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. There were some glitches on our website yesterday, so if you attempted to like get into the MP4 videos or into the blog or the archives of the radio show, there were several links that were messed up for some reason. And we have it all back in order. So give it another try if you couldn't get in there yesterday. And as always, drop me an email at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. And you can just tell me what link or what page isn't working. And I'll do my best to get it fixed. Appreciate you. So welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Ready? Honored and delighted that you're here to engage this conversation one more time, bringing forward one more level of understanding,
Michael,
one
adjust,
more piece of the puzzle. And
adjust your microphone just a little bit.
We get to take advantage of this technology that empowers us to have a conversation about these first century Aramaic tools. And then, within minutes after the conversation's over, anyone can go and download the MP3 and give it a listen again or pass it on to friends.
Michael, if you're still on there, you just disappeared. Let's give him just, let me walk in there and let him know he may still be talking and give an introduction. So hold on just a second. Okay, he's dialing back in. Let's give him just a moment. Technology, what can you say? All right. While he's having some issues there getting in, I'll just say again that I hope everybody had an awesome 4th of July celebration, whether you were with family or not. I was able to get my dad to see all of his remaining siblings. There's counting dad, there's only 5 of them. And so I was able to make sure that he got with each one and took pictures of them together. And so that was the highlight. One of my brothers was able to join us down on the farm, and so we had a good time. And I'm not sure what's going on for Michael, why he's not in. Oh, I see him down here as a regular call-in, so let me turn his microphone on. Hello.
Hey, sweetie. I don't know what happened. It just kept disconnecting me on the call-in line. So.
Well, we got you.
This one. But we're here, so. And delighted to be here. Well, the weekend of the celebration of liberty is over, and of course, liberty from the past becomes one of the key components, or one of the key objectives of this work of forgiveness. That instead of running in the replicant mind, instead of repeat, 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 that we move into a space where the hostilities and fears of the past are removed, and we get to live in a different mind. It's interesting. 2,000 years ago, they talked about these two minds, and you can remember Paul talking about the mind of Christ, and we've been taught to think of that as a religious thing, but it's not religious at all. It's just that there is the mind of the body. There is carbon-based memory. There is what's stored in the database as memory and shoots up perceptions, you know, generates perceptions that appear to be true about the world, but really they're only true about the content of carbon-based memory. And then there's this mind that is a mind that is keyed to love, and whenever it's active, love is always present in physiology, is always active in physiology. When it's not, then we're in that other mind. And that other mind is a mind to be literally removed. You know, there's a self that lives in our memory bank, all the thoughts and ideas and messages we've been given about ourselves and that we've come to think of as ourselves. And that's the self, if you look into those ancient teachings, that they said had to die. And remember, Yeshua says, in order for you to live, you've got to die. He's not talking about a bullet in your head, cancel the thought. He's talking about the self that is a product of the firing of brain cells out of the past has to go, in order for the true mind, the mind of love, to come to life and to function out of that. So this whole body of work, in its simplest form, is about literally removing, dismantling the self that's based in hostility or fear, and creating a cradle, creating a space for the self that is based in love to come into full expression and full fruition through our physiology, incarnating as love and bringing that presence of love into action in the world. So that's the objective of this work, and certainly lots of work to be done. We were watching an interesting video last night. You might find it intriguing. And it was called, let's see, what was that, Gene? The Light.
It was the Tales of Light. And it's on Netflix.
Tales of Light. Yeah. Tales of Light on Netflix. And they were going into third world countries and looking at some of the conditions there. And pretty tragic. And certainly something that needs our compassion and support, the healing of the poverty dynamics that are going on in the world. Although they did make one statement that I thought was totally and completely out of line with truth, and that was he talked about how it's getting worse and worse. And the truth is, if we look on a global scale, more people have food in their bellies. Your keyboard sweetie's rocking away in my ear. More people have food in their bellies, have clean water and shelter and education than have ever happened on the planet. Like, we've made quantum leaps in that direction. And there's still some quanta to go, no question. But you might find it interesting to look at that. Who knows, you might be motivated to take some action. There's some pretty sad and crazy situations that they showed in some third world countries where little kids at 7, 8, and 9 are working in highly, highly toxic environments and literally having to work, you know, in things like mines, you know, shoveling stuff in mines that are just, you know, totally and completely a wreck and unsafe. But somehow or other, there's such a lack of integrity in the adult population that that's allowed to go on, and it's just a cultural norm. And certainly something that we can hold a space for shifting and changing so that the children of the world are cared for out of this space of love and are nurtured and protected and given a fair shot at growing into healthy adults with healthy minds and healthy bodies in a healthy environment. And again, I certainly acknowledge all of the people who've put energy in that direction to make some of the monumental upgrades that have been made over the decades. And beyond that, let's take a look at the current reading in Why Is This Happening to Me Again? We're on the chapter on choosing teachers, and we've got a page or two to go in that chapter, looking at the difference between the false teacher and the true teacher. And there's some conversation going on with Richard when we look at the negative side. He's like, well, but we don't want to be condemning. We don't want to be judgmental. It's like, that's true, but we do want to be able to be honest. We want to be able to look at and honestly assess what's going on in our minds, in our worlds, in our family systems. So the conversation moves into the need to condemn negative behavior, or those practicing it can also be healed. A willingness to investigate is required. Knowledge is power. Ignorance does not lead to healing. It leads to staying stuck behind a prison fence, suffering, and pretending there is no way out. Classic victimhood. With information, understanding, and dedication, it's possible to create a space of healing for everyone who engages in negative behavior. You know, we live in on the punishment planet, and everybody thinks, well, somebody does something bad or wrong, and they need to be punished. I think that's one of the most disastrous pieces of mind energy that ever showed up on the earth. You know, there is no one, I don't care how depraved they are, that deserves punishment. They might deserve to be isolated from the society because of the dangers they present. You know, people in the political arena today, that the world would be much better off if they were isolated from society because of the types of messages they deliver and the degrading of other people that takes place. But punishment isn't the answer. You know, punishment just inflicts more of the energy. When you think of energy on the planet as coming in pools, if we've got a certain size pool of energy of suffering, and somebody comes along and sees someone who's inflicting suffering and says, well, we need to inflict more suffering on them, then the pool of suffering energy just got bigger. Yes, no question. Isolate, remove from society, definitely an upgrade. But punishment is just silly. It just, when we think in terms of energy and the energies that we support and the energies that we engage in. So this healing that's necessary. And this healing process includes ourselves and anyone who takes advantage of another. Within this understanding, we can also support the healing of people who set themselves up to be manipulated. Every player in a situation must be healed for a total shift to occur. Healing also means that each person involved automatically moves closer to the awareness of their true purpose and finds it easier to be guided in its accomplishment. It is valuable to comprehend the healing dynamic so that we have the capacity to choose what to do and what not to do. Understanding manipulation in no way evaluates what another has done or should do, for that is his or her business, not ours. However, having proper understanding allows a space for us to be held accountable and hold others accountable for what is done. So accountability is an important part of the healing process. Just pretending something never happened and pretending that healing's occurred is not a sane or sensible solution. So understanding becomes the key. So that's our couple of paragraphs for today from Choosing Teachers. And it looks like we've got about 50 minutes left, so let's check in and see if we've got a hand up in the phone queue, sweetie.
It is all quiet.
Well, then let's make some noise. Somebody out there got something to share with us? Let's
press
ramp
one.
It up. Push one. Let's have a conversation. Would love to hear from you. What's happening in your world? What's exciting in your world? How are the tools fitting in your world? What questions do you have about, in particular, the forgiveness process? And, of course, the forgiveness tool was the beginning of this work back 40-plus years ago, and it's grown to a whole series of tools that we're here to support you with. So there are lots of different worksheets on the website. If you go to whyagain.org and you look under the section on worksheets, you will see that we have lots of different tools, lots of different how-to. You know, the worksheets are a format to follow to bring the mind into awareness and to wake up to who we are.
We have a hand up.
Oh, great. Let's say hello to our caller.
It's area code 406. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Hi, it's Lisa.
Oh, hey there, young lady. Good to hear your voice. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to tell you about nothing about work, but just about an experience that I had. So I don't know if you've seen that Bob and I, we drove to Pagosa Springs, Colorado from Ohio and then drove back. So it took us about 2 weeks. We stayed at Mom's new house in Pagosa Springs for about a week. But
nice.
While in Pagosa Springs, we went to breakfast one morning, and we were laughing, and we were having this beautiful, whatever, layered with chili and beautiful stuff. And I said out loud, I'm going to hit the head. Never in my life have I said, I'm going to hit the head. But you know who used to say that?
Who's
Patrick.
That?
Patrick used to say it every single time. And I started to cry because you know, we were – at the last intensive, Patrick, used to joke about, well, let's go down to IHOP and have a breakfast, you know, and we were laughing and joking about how breakfast is our favorite meal and, you know, all those things about, anyway.
Right.
And it was just so, it was just quite a moment. And it was just a moment, but it was really neat.
What do you suppose triggered those particular brain cells to come up with that phrase and key you into that? You may be hanging out with your son?
I don't know. But I just thought it was interesting. I think
maybe
it was,
Patrick
I actually
was
think
visiting
it,
you.
That's kind of what I was thinking. I was thinking that, you know, because we were eating something that was fun and we were having fun and laughing, I was thinking maybe that was the case. But what do I know?
Well, I join you in acknowledging Patrick and holding the space for the next level of his journey, whatever he's up to now.
Yeah.
You know, in the early, when he passed, Julie shared that he was around her quite a bit at Heartland, and there was a fair bit of communication, but I haven't really talked to her lately about whether there's been any recent communication.
Yep. So, anyway, that was all I had to share.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's interesting as well that when Ari passed, he also, Julie said she got some really clear communication that he was at Heartland and doing some inner work. While he was there, so we'll hold them both in a blessing.
Yeah, I know that Julie was having some, it was about a month ago, there was some correspondence with her, I think, on the radio show that she was having troubles dialing in. It would be nice to hear how she's doing.
Well, I'll drop her a text and say hello.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah, invite her to dial in and say hello. We haven't heard her voice on the show in a while.
Yeah. So, anyway, that was all I had for you. Lots of, you
cool.
know, lots of, obviously, you know, riding in a car. I'm sure you folks can relate. Riding in a car for 2 weeks with one person, traveling, it gives lots of lovely opportunities for growth.
You mean you had opportunities to learn forgiveness driving with Bob for that long?
I did.
How amazing.
I did.
How amazing.
Yes.
Did you take advantage of them all?
I'm not sure I took advantage of every single one of them, but the ones that were the biggest for me. So it was good. And it, you know, it's just so funny when one, even if I don't always do the right thing, since now I understand it's all about me and my perceptions, you know, I can have anger triggered, but the bottom line is it's all me.
It's mine. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
We're getting ready on Sunday, actually, to take our first journey in quite a while. We're going to head to St. Louis. We have a new grandbaby there that is, in August will be a year of circling the sun. So we're going to get to see her for the first time. And then our other granddaughter, who's been circling the earth for 9 years, and my daughter and her husband. I don't think you've ever met Krista. And then we're going to head to Kansas City and spend some time with my son, and then make a circle back through Heartland. We'll see Magda and Chuck and Julie, and get some things at Heartland and head back to Bristol. So we're going to be on the road for about 10 days. So looking forward to that.
That's
exciting. It's been a long time since we've been on the road.
Right. And I was so – it was so nice to see Jeannie's pictures on Facebook yesterday. All of a sudden it dawned on me. I was like, oh, that's right. They used to have a huge family get-together every 4th of July. And to see her father. And it was just a very – those were great pictures. So.
Did you see the video of Aria doing Tai Chi and then doing the love balls to share around with everybody?
No.
Oh, well, take a, I'm sure Jeannie put it on her page, but it's also on my page, but take a look and it's pretty sweet. She's got a little dress on and a diaper, of course, and she raises one of the legs, Tai Chi, you know, she's practicing Tai Chi, and then she's generating this energy and sending it to everybody. This is just really sweet. And she just had a blast the whole weekend with all these cousins and aunts and uncles.
Well, I wrote on Jeannie's page, you know, and of course I've never met Aria. I don't, you know, but You know, she's such a large presence when she's with you folks on the radio show, and then, and I feel like I can feel her having, maybe not feel her, but it resonates for me when my own children were that age and how eager and how exciting, and she's just such a cute little thing. But when I saw the pictures of her next to her cousins who are much bigger than her, and, you know, she's such a little thing, but she's such a large presence. Anyway, it was almost shocking to me to see how teeny she is. And not saying that she's undersized. She's just a little kid is what she is.
Oh,
you know?
She's perfect for her size. But but her cousins, you know, they're the cousins she was playing with, and she's 34 months, and the cousins she's playing with are 4 and 5 and 6. And they at one point said to her, how old are you? And she said 2. And they were like, you're only 2? So anyway, pretty sweet.
Good,
we're pretty blessed.
Yeah.
All right, well, tell Bob we said hello and give him a hug for us.
I will. And
all right.
Safe journeys. All right. Aloha.
Thank you. All right. Take care. Aloha.
All right. We have 38 minutes.
Yeah. Sweet to connect with and look at this whole community that's developed around the work over the last 50 years. I was just on the phone with the physician from Florida, is out in California, and people he's connecting with, and it's just really pretty sweet, pretty cool to just have this community all over the globe. And so if you're out there in listener land, what's on your mind? If you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, 563-999-3581 is the calling number.
And we have a hand.
Great. Let's say hello.
Area code 480, you're on the air. Who do we have?
Hi, it's Cecilia again.
Well, hey, young lady, welcome.
Hey, yesterday when you were sharing about codependence, interdependence, communication practicum, I have it right in front of me, and I had a question about it. So
okay.
I don't know if I'm reading this from a place of lack of money. Okay, uh-huh. I'm just saying that. I'm just saying, and I know I am, so I have to be honest. And I don't believe I have a lack. I think I live like I do. Okay, anyway, so I have a thought that I do, but I'm not lacking. Okay, so I'll just cancel that call. But I am curious because I was reading it, and it includes, well, you would know, I don't have, but I'm kind of looking at it. Topics covered. All of these topics that are covered, I have actually the DVD of the communication to you, hear what I think I said. And I have everything but the mind shifters and still point breathing. I have that on DVD. So what does that matter? Did I already have them? That I've already listened to them a million times? Okay, that's exactly.
Well, what you'll find, remember the whole process is one of building brain cells.
Yeah.
So in an intensive, you know, most people who do an intensive have worked with the tools for some time, have used the tools, and the intensive space is one that goes, you know, it sews things together in a unique way that opens a space for people to do their work.
Okay.
So it's about building brain cells. You know, a lot of the interaction, there's interaction at where, you know, like let's say if you've got the video of why is this happening to me again, it's me presenting that workshop. But then in the intensive, I present that workshop, and then there's a question and answer session. And it's done in the context of you've got a personal code evaluation that tells you where your challenges are, and here are the assignments for working through it. So it's much more personalized. And you mentioned the codependence to interdependence, or pardon me, the communication workshop. That's a workshop that I started doing about 25 years ago. And it has almost experienced no change in 25 years. During this last intensive, we did a session with Mogden and Chuck. You've heard us talk about them. You've heard Mogden on the show before, and probably Chuck as well. And what for 25 years has been a one-page, here are the responsibility communication rules. As a result of that interaction and the people who participated in it with the questions and answers that developed and such, that's now a three-page instruction set. Actually, we're just waiting to hear back from Magda with some edits from her and getting ready to publish the new instruction set. So if you watch that, it's like light years beyond what the DVD itself is. And it brings all the material in a way that's a continuous building of brain cells. It's like, I'm sure that oftentimes you recognize that, gee, you know, Michael talked about that topic 6 months ago, and Michael talked about that same topic 5 months ago, and Michael talked about that same topic four, and Michael talked about it again, and I have a whole different understanding now.
Oh, that's
because
true, yeah.
It's building brain cells. And I'll talk about that topic tomorrow, and then there'll be still a whole other level of understanding. Everybody grasps each of the ideas on the level that they've got brain cells to do. The intensive builds a whole new set of brain cells. And if money's a challenge, I'll be happy to work with you to break it up over some kind of a payment plan that makes it doable. The total, including the personal code evaluations, the food program, and 80 hours of video is $600. So,
right. And I also did look for the meditation video. I actually got some that downloaded for just downloaded meditations. One was, and I sort of listened to it.
They were different light meditations and all that Michael did, and the Wellness Through Stillness is not one of the MP4 downloads. And Michael, it's 90 hours of video.
Oh, that's right. It's 90, yes. It's actually 89 right now. We've still got one more extra session that we're going to do to make it around 90 hours, and then even 90 hours of video work.
And now with time, is it like going to a university where you show up or you miss out?
It's totally and completely done at your own pace. Jeannie will send you a spreadsheet that has a link to all of the videos and what the videos are, and you do that work.
Okay.
Like, for instance, if you've got, let's say, the workshops we cover are Why Is This Happening to Me Again?, Healing Through Relationships, Communications, you hear what I think I said, Codependence to Interdependence, and Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. So if you've got all of those videos, you've got about, 13 or 14 hours of video.
Does that matter?
It doesn't matter. No, it's a foundation. But I'm just saying that you've got about 15 hours of video if you've got all of those DVDs.
This program, which is
a whole lot of interaction and such, is 90 hours.
So
that's just scratching the surface of what we do in interactive and question answers and such. So what it consists of, you know, it's actually two different intensives. The first intensive that we did was 14 weeks. We did 3 hours every Sunday for 14 weeks, and then we did an hour on Tuesday night. So it was live interaction, question answer, and teaching work. Then we did another, actually it ended up being about 16 weeks with the second intensive. And that was a self-study, somewhat like this, except that there was a two-hour live component, so there's an additional 2 hours of conversation each week for that 16 weeks on top of the information from the first intensive. So the whole thing comes out to be about 90 hours. So it's a lot more material that we cover than...
So I'm used to seeing, like, something... Is this interacting with anybody else at all, or just like on Facebook? Like I see it says Facebook.
No, it's done. We did it on Zoom live.
Yeah.
And the first intensive, I forget our number. We had something like 25 people. So there's 25 faces on those videos where we're interacting in their question and answers. And actually, it's kind of interesting at Heartland. You know, I wasn't so sure how doing a Zoom intensive was going to work, but the feedback that we got was that when people are at Heartland doing an intensive, I'm up in front of the room and everybody's facing in front of them. So they're really not connecting with and seeing what's happening for other people. In this intensive, the whole time you're sitting face to face with 25 other people. So you're getting live responses, live interactions, live question answers, and the guidance through the mind shifters and still point breathing process as well, which is the first time I've ever done that other than live.
Right.
In this particular intensive. So
this is like at a time that will work for me that I will sign up for it when I look at my schedule and go, okay, I have this amount of time. And how much time do you recommend per day to work on it?
Well, you know, that's a totally individual process.
You're going to receive
a spreadsheet with links to 90 hours of video. How quickly are you going to do it? Are you going to, you know, sit like you're sitting in a college classroom and do 3 hours a day? Then you're going to go through that in 30 days. Are you going to do 2 hours a week? Then you're going to go through that in 45 weeks.
And then,
of course, the radio show gives the space for asking questions and getting answers based on what you do this week. So we're here. This kind of is an extension of the intensive as well, intended to answer any questions that come up as you're doing that 90-hour video series. So it's paced totally the way you want to pace it.
Well, I want to pace it so that I can move forward in my life, and at the same time, I'm sitting here that this is going to, like, unless I get clear about this, I'm not going to be able to move in that direction, is that I want to work on a worksheet today, and I also want to spend at least an hour a day to transcribe the radio shows. And so that's a lot of hours that I guess I would devote. I remember you saying one time to somebody, or maybe it was in one of your videos, that you need to devote 2.5 hours a day on your healing work.
That's the ideal, ultimately, is tithing, is 10% of your day.
Yes. So I can work that out. What would that take me to do if I'm doing an hour a day on the transcription, half an hour a day on a worksheet? I'd have left
another hour a day.
Another hour a day.
So
how long?
If you spend an hour a day, you'd be talking about a 90-day program.
Oh, I see. Okay, I hear you. Yeah, I'd like to get that clear in my head so that I don't feel panicky that I'm committed to something that I just don't know how to fit into my life.
Right.
So
at your own pace.
Well, yes, but I would like to do it in 90 days. It just seems like any longer than that is kind of, I don't know.
Well, here's what I offer. When you finish the 90 days, like there were people in this intensive, one in particular, maybe Magda's out there listening to the show if she wants to push the button. And Magda has the responsibility communication tool has always been one of her favorites. And, you know, she's someone who's been doing the work for about 12 years. She actually came and she's been to, I don't even know how many intensives, 10 or 12 of them at Heartland. She came and spent 6 months on the support team at Heartland, living and working at Heartland with the tools.
Yes.
And that responsibility communication was one of her favorites. And when she did when she volunteered to be the sample person to do the process in this intensive, and I don't know how I can say it for her, but maybe Magda, if you're listening, help, push one. She can share with you. But it was like just boosted her light years beyond what was her favorite tool, you know, when she was at Heartland, was what, Jeannie, about 8 or 9 years ago? And it was her favorite tool back then. But she just came to a whole new level of understanding and a whole new level of application of it that's been mind-boggling for her and exciting for her.
Yes.
And having been the one who created the workshop and taught it for 25 years, it was a whole new level of excitement and insight for me because I hadn't changed that worksheet in 25 years. And it's a whole different, whole new thing. The basics are still there, but a whole different level.
Okay. So you're saying that Jeannie will help me out with the maybe payments per month?
Yeah, we can set it up. That's no problem. If you like, I'll give you a call after the show and we can have a conversation about it.
Okay, that's fine.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. Well, any other questions?
No. I'm working on transcribing yesterday's now, so that's three, because I really want to work on this dog issue with my hostility.
Right.
So, you know, that's where I'm going to go right now. I'll listen to the rest of your show another time, but I wanted to make I got clear about that communication thing.
Okay. And we'll hold the space, you know, to recognize that hostility is just one of those issues that can come up pointed at dogs or people or yourself or anybody or anything, and we'll hold the space for it being resolved so you get finished with it.
I will. Thanks.
Yeah, you got our support. All right, young lady.
Okay, talk to you later.
Okay, blessings. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We have 23 minutes. Somebody press 1.
Yeah. And if you're not sure exactly what we were talking about with the intensive, we did a 14-week codependence to interdependence communication practicum, and then did a second one and put that all together in an assemblage of video information that takes you through a really in-depth teaching in the process. There's actually a whole new worksheet, and my computer's sitting here. I've been working on it this morning. We're refining that worksheet on another level as well, on a PowerPerson worksheet, and also the communication worksheet. So, ongoing process. It's in development. So if we can be of any support or assistance, 563-999-3581 if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you. Otherwise, if you're listening on your phone and you push 1, we will be having a conversation. The forgiveness tool is available on our website. Go to whyagain.org, our website. Upper left-hand corner is a link that says Start Here. Click that link. It'll walk you through many, 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 many hours of instruction on how to and why to do the first century Aramaic forgiveness process. And recognize that that first century Aramaic forgiveness process has nothing to do with, I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. We are never going to suggest that you ever forgive anybody ever again, because you can't forgive anybody, because forgiveness isn't about letting somebody else off the hook. Forgiveness is about uncovering parts of your own mind that hold hostility or fear, accessing those parts of your mind, exposing them to love, and removing them. So forgiveness is removal. So we're not talking about forgiving yourself or forgiving other people. If you have hostility, if, you know, Cecilia was just talking about anger. So the forgiveness work would be for Cecilia to remove her anger. That's her forgiveness work. People have sadness, or grief, or rage, or depression, hostility, fear. It's about the removal of those things. And it's a process that one goes through step by step. And our objective here is to help people to build the brain cells for how to do that, and then to garner support for walking through everything in your life that is unlike who you and what you really are. And my offering is that who you and what you really are is the active presence of love. If you hold a newborn child, tap into the essence of the child. That's the stuff we're made of. It's not something we do to each other. And we've been tricked into thinking we're supposed to love one another. We're going to say never, ever, ever effort loving anybody. The effort to be done correctly is to effort being who you are, functioning out of the space of active present love. And then, of course, when you point that state of being toward another, people would say, well, you're being very loving. But that would be the expression comes from being. Strictly speaking, we can't love anybody. We either are love or we're not. It's not about somebody else. When I forgive my hostility and fear, the only thing that's left is who I am. And then I stand as that space of active present love. And as that experience becomes deepened in me, I get to live in a different world. To our website, whyagain.org. In the upper left-hand corner, click the button that says Start Here. It'll walk you through the whole forgiveness process. You can also go to your app store on your phone, type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. Download the app. It's a totally and completely private app. You can do the forgiveness process right there on your phone. The worksheet is embedded in the app. Two different versions of it, actually. There's a game called the Dragon Klingon game to introduce kids to forgiveness. And there are links there that you can go right to my commitment from the Healing True Relationships workshop. So lots of functionality, and you know, we're always adding new pieces to the puzzle so that the support becomes broadened. Invite you to download the app and put it to work. Share it with somebody else. And then as you enter into, oh, go for it, sweetie.
I was just going to say we have a hand up.
Awesome. Let's say hello.
I think this might be Doug, 314. You're on the air.
Hey, Michael, it's Doug. Yes. Is this
hey,
audio?
Welcome.
I guess it's
you're
okay.
Loud and clear.
Oh, great. Okay.
Where do you be in the world?
I'm in Minnesota.
Ah, still up there? Cool.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Well.
No, life isn't giving you opportunities to learn forgiveness again, is it, Doug?
Oh, my gosh, yes. Yes. So I'm doing a worksheet, and you know, I just thought, well, you know, whatever conversation evolves will be helpful. I'm
good.
Diane and I, did you say take a breath?
No, I say that okay. Was a good breath.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, we're talking later today, I think, and I'm doing a worksheet on terror because I see that I have terror, really with any outcome of our conversation, and it's a good worksheet, and it's showing me some cool stuff, and I realize that the thought I have is if I commit to anything, I will painfully fail. It's like that's the thought. And
how about a mind shifter?
Yeah, okay, great.
Everything I commit to is always outrageously successful. That were your presumption about you and your life. I mean, what if that was just the automatic state of mind? I'm going to do this and it's going to be outrageously successful.
Yeah, that would be great.
Be
the complete inversion of what I'm discovering inside of me right now. If I'm doing this work, committing to anything, is using my willpower, my self-authority equals and is a formula for a generator of a guarantee of failure. Don't commit so that you don't fail. So that content I'm trying to remove.
So notice that when you don't commit, you just failed. Like it's already a done deal.
Right. Yeah.
So how about commitment? Commitment is safe and healing and always leads to successful outcomes.
Great. All right.
Where do you suppose, I mean, this sounds like a pretty deep thought disorder that commitment to me means failure. Was that a power person dynamic in your life? that no matter what you did, there was always someone there to put you down or drag you down or tear you down or beat you down?
What I've been seeing so far is that, the first thought that came forward was I really committed on my marriage to do all I could to make it successful, and I failed. And, you know, and I can see that my person dynamic was, or it failed. You know, my power person dynamic was always trying to please my power person in order to, you know, get love, of course. And I...
You realize
I guess,
you can't get love, right? You realize how fake a goal that is. You can't get love. That's kind of like, you know, the fake news game that's being played in the world right now. It's a fake promise. You can't get love from anybody. You can function as love and therefore experience love, but you're not going to get that from anybody else. And if you don't have it yourself and you try to get it from them, you just set yourself up for failure because you can't get it from them. You can get approval, but you can't taste the experience of love from someone else.
That's right.
It comes from you experiencing who you are. And part of the ability to experience who you are is to fully enter your life, fully committed, rocking into it. And so that thought disorder that automatically is going to be failure is one that just needs to be removed.
Clearly. What was that statement you just said about you enter your life fully committed? Something about that.
Yeah, it's only when you, as a human being, as love, enter your physiology, ready to go into the world fully functional, fully expressive, and fully committed, that you're ever going to get to experience the love that you are. I think, I always have to keep that on the shelf back there somewhere so it doesn't get hurt. Then the experience of love is never available. I might find somebody that I'm attracted to and they're attracted to me and, it's so wonderful. We have fun. She approves of me at every moment. I approve of her at every moment. But there's no love in that. There's only love
and
when you enter the picture.
Well, there's only love when what? Please, that's what I want.
When you enter the picture.
When you enter the picture.
You being who you are.
Okay.
And if you're committed to that,
only love
it can't
when,
be anything
when
else.
Would it be accurate to say there's only love when I show up as the love that I am? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. If I have to keep me, the truth of my direct experience of love, hidden somewhere in the corner because I might get hurt, then I'm never going to get to experience it because it's always hidden in the corner, so it won't get hurt.
Yeah.
And when I create the space, go ahead.
I see myself resisting the idea of, you know, trying to constantly please her or someone else, you know, constantly trying to meet their goals so that they'll, quote, love me or approve of me or so that I can have a relationship with them. Like
that's a whole falsity, Doug. That whole thing is a false dynamic.
And I feel
no matter what, if I'm in relationship with another human being, I'm probably in relationship with someone who has some form of hostility or fear in them. And sooner or later, no matter what, I'm going to bring it up for them. And when I bring it up, I'm going to do a behavior. And my behavior might be wondrous and wonderful, and it's still going to bring up their hostility. And if they turn it toward me, and I think that their hostility is about me, I'm going to go put myself back in the corner and hide again because look what I did. I tried so hard, but they don't love me. I mean, if someone you're in relationship with is in hostility, how about coming forward as compassion and the presence of love to support their healing rather than thinking it's all about you because it's not about you. Somebody goes into hostility and disapproval, it's nothing to do with you. You may be the trigger. But if in that circumstance, you buy into the thought disorder that it's about me, it means that I'm a bad person or whatever it is, then you just vacated your own life again.
Yeah.
The truth is, in relationships, we have people, and people carry generations and generations and generations of hostility and fear. And I don't care how much work you've done, I've never met anybody that's freed of their hostility or fear fully. I've never met anybody. And so can I be the space and make the space of compassion and keep my being present even if she goes into some sort of hostility and storms at me in disapproval? Can I recognize, oh, sweetie, I see that you're storming in disapproval. I'm going to hold the space. I'm going to breathe. I'm going to be with you. I'm here for you and with you. Keeping communication open and keeping love conscious, active, and present as we heal, celebrate life, and grow together. Otherwise, if you think that you functioning and experiencing yourself as a human being, as love, is dependent on her approval or disapproval, you set yourself up for failure.
Very good. Very good. Yay, yay, yay. That's helpful for me to hear.
And, you know, we come from a culture that sets us up for that failure. We come from a culture that has parents that don't know their hostility or fear belongs to them, and they go, you little rotten, look what you did to me, you know. And that's all fraud. It's all a lie. This work is about undoing the lies and showing up as who we are. And, of course, that's going to come in stages because, you know, we tend to resonate into relationships with people who have matching bags of garbage. And so when your bag of garbage goes off, it's going to tend to resonate her bag of garbage, and now we've got the War of the Roses. But when each of you realizes, I'm not experiencing myself as love because of something that I'm doing, then I can change what I'm doing. I can forgive this disapproval, this hostility, this fear in me. And again, that's a process. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen today or tomorrow or probably next year. But it's a process, piece by piece by piece. And you apply the tools to walk through and work through that. And, you know, some of the hurts that we carry around generationally and, you know, within ourselves. I know this weekend I was doing some pretty deep processing and still point breathing and came across a generational pattern that was horrendously physically and emotionally painful and realized it wasn't just mine, but it was a very common one in the culture. And to just choose to be with that and to let it move, to let it process through me. And to recognize that when I open and awaken to the truth of who I am, that I can become the space. You know, you go back and you read about Yeshua taking on the sins of the world. And that's oftentimes done by the religions in a way of blaming you because if you hadn't sinned, he wouldn't have had to do it. What Yeshua was doing was opening his field to free himself of his generational patterns, and we're told that his healing process was so intense in Gethsemane that he sweat blood. Now, I don't know if you've had any healing crisis where you've gotten to the point where you've sweat blood yet. I've had some pretty intense healing crises. I haven't had one that deep yet, and I'm not asking for it. I'll you know, gladly let that one go. But we're told that's how deep his process went. And then it wasn't that he put himself in a position of blame for what the world was doing. He put himself in a position where, as the active presence of love, he was to begin to embrace the seemingly incalculable, unfathomable pain and suffering in the world and be the space where it could be dissolved. Now, perhaps it would be helpful to imagine yourself, you know, he took three disciples to Gethsemane with him. And in essence, what he said to them is, you guys, I've been training you to be the space of love now for 3 years full time. I want you to come and hold the space for me. He goes into the garden. He's like, you know, Dad, I'm not sure I can do this. And then he checks for the energy of his support team, those who are supposed to be holding to active present love for him. He goes, he's like, can't you guys even stay awake for an hour? Could you imagine yourself, Doug, in a state of connectedness and goodwill, going with him and being at the Garden of Gethsemane and holding that space? Being that space. Maybe even coming up to the point where you step into the garden with him and hold the space, shoulder to shoulder, for literally becoming the space where all of the unfathomable pain of the world could be processed and healed. That, you know, perhaps if those who were at the garden gate had stayed awake, perhaps the four of them together could have gotten ahead of, could have been in such a powerful processing space that they'd gotten ahead of the rate at which the world was generating pain and were able to start to reduce, and give the world, you know, you've worked with the Course in Miracles and the Course talks about the holy instant. Perhaps give the world just one holy instant where the pain has been drained off sufficiently that people can start over again. That's the visual I was given this weekend in the work I was doing.
That's great.
And you know what it's going to take to do it? Commitment up the wazoo.
Yeah.
So are you willing to move to that level and move to that space? And the only thing you're going to have to give up is everything you've ever learned.
As in everything I've ever learned about trying to please people and meet their goals and please my power person for approval and all that, mm-hmm. and everything.
And,
right?
And please yourself and disapproval, heal the disapproval of self. Yeah, all that.
Sounds like a good plan to me.
Well, you know,
big one.
It really means that we each really need to grow up beyond anything we've ever conceived of before. So I'd support you, if that makes sense, writing out, or maybe if you've got any artistic bent, drawing yourself there, seeing yourself there and being inspired to do the work that it takes to be there, to hold that space. And we are down to the last few seconds, so the show's going to cut us off, so I'm just going to say thank you for opening the conversation, and maybe we continue it tomorrow if appropriate. And we'll be holding the space for your conversation this afternoon.
All right, very good.
Who knows? Maybe she'll be ready to go there with you.
Maybe.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, Michael.
Okay, great. Appreciate you. Blessings. Holding the space. Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for joining us.